Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Really? I'm surprised by that, too. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com when we upload them, and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, videos, photos, stuff, other things, at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, Jack!
Yay!
How's it going, man?
Good until I hit all the traffic.
I thought for certain, that you had either finally had your heart attack, or it was like an awesome, awesome, amazing nap, and you had decided not to wake up.
If it was the nap, I would have told you it was the heart attack.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably. It's like 6:30, and I'm like, huh. The chair next to me is empty. So, and that would be sad.
Oh.
Because then I wouldn't be able to ask you something.
What's that, John?
I didn't ask you anything
yet. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just used to route response.
Right? Hey, Jack, guess what?
What's that, John?
No, I don't want to do it.
Well, you have to, because we have bills to pay.
That's true. This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors, or at least it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night. And TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 night vision goggle to the IR Patrol thermal monocular and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that likes to wander off and hunt Pokemon or other stuff. TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC, now with financing. Own or finance the night. I like that ad. I'm sorry.
It's a good one.
It's
a little dated now because no one's playing Pokemon anymore. But
well, not only that, Game of Thrones isn't on, and Harry Potter is actually going to be back out in IMAX though.
Ooh.
For a week. We're not going.
I'm going.
Well, yeah, but we're not going. At least I'm not admitting to that publicly. So, on to the show. We've got Larry Lindemann joining us, and I'll just get him right on the air because no one wants to hear you and I go back and forth. So, joining us, Larry Lindemann. Larry, how's it going?
Hey, good. How you doing, John? Oh, Jack, how are you?
Good, man.
Can't complain. I'm glad that your phone is working. Mario was telling us before the show started that, hey, Larry's having problems with his phone. And I'm like, ooh, I don't want to talk for that long. That'd be bad.
So. Yeah, I don't know if it was Mario or me, but I'm thinking it was Mario, just saying.
Well, I like to blame everything on him, too, because, you know. Sure. Actually, no, we wouldn't be able to do the show without his help. And I would very much, very much like for us to not suddenly have a technical issue in the middle of the show. And
yeah, you know, don't need me near all those buttons.
No,
that would
right?
be good.
You're like, man, I'm leaving. Anyway, so Larry, you've been on the show before, but for those that didn't catch that appearance or don't know who you are, they should. Can you let us know who you are, what you do, and we'll just hop right into the night's topic.
Sure. I won't get too long, but Larry Lindemann, point-driven training, work with the ShivWorks Collective, most of the guys who you've had on the show, all of the guys you've had on the show before. Kind of our little ringleader is Craig Douglas. We teach probably the extremely close quarter problem would be probably the briefest description. Was a cop for 26 years, actually still am a cop right now. Worked for the Illinois State Police, was on SWAT, worked in undercover narcotics, worked in general criminal investigation, and brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, pretty active competitor with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Trained martial arts my whole life, starting when I was 14, 15 years old. I'm 53 now. Now I work as a training coordinator at a range in the Chicago area, the range at 355. So I'm doing that as well. So kind of a variety of different things.
Nice. Now you actually, so you brought up BJJ. You actually just came in second in the country or the world?
It's the world. It's the Masters Worlds.
The world. No big thing. Yeah, you know, just the known world.
The known world of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So that makes it about, you know, there's probably about 10 people. No, it was a pretty big. It was actually one of their biggest tournaments. It was it had a lot of big names in the BJJ competition circuit, and it's by belt and it's by age group. So you know, there's plenty of silver medalists out there in the Masters, but I ended up taking the silver, which was pretty good. It was, you know, obviously my goal was to take the gold, but fell a little bit short of that. But next year we'll see what happens.
I'm just kind of hoping that if I ever, like, get off my butt and do anything worth mentioning, that I am nearly as humble as you are about an amazing, amazing accomplishment.
I would not be.
No, I wouldn't be either. But that's probably why I will never do anything like that. So, you know, but I guess here's what I want to talk about first, and then we'll get into why we're talking about what we're going to talk about later.
Sure.
In the training community and also just like in the gun industry in general, there's a lot of focus on shooting skills. There's a lot of gun-centric training. What are your thoughts on empty hand skills for self-defense? Is that something that's important if you carry a gun, or is the untrained individual's generalized thought that I've got the gun and I'm cool? Is that accurate or not? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's pretty funny because being involved in different online communities, you know, way back in the day, I was involved with the CrossFit community. This is before it became popular, before anybody knew what it was.
Right.
And one of the common themes that would happen is that people would talk about they would throw out scenarios like, if I do this, this will happen, or I don't think this is going to work. Well, the problem with that is that you just got to do it.
Right.
And that's the thing that kind of is amazing and sort of something that happened in the 1990s. There's kind of a coevolution of two technologies. One was the UFC, and the other one was simunition.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those modalities allow you to see actually what happens, to see, hey, let's throw two guys in a cage, let them do whatever the heck they want to do against a resisting opponent, and let's see what happens.
Right.
Simunition was, hey, we don't have to talk theory anymore. Let's go in a room, let's have a gunfight.
Right.
Let's go in a car, let's have a gunfight. Let's talk to some dude from 5 feet away and let him have freedom of will to do whatever he wants to do, and let's see what happens. So we could do that. It amazes me in this day and age that people don't just do that. You know, they take the word of a trainer that's never actually been in a conflict with somebody in at normal distance.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, the way to answer that question is to just go out and try it, not in a competition, but with another human being who has free will to do whatever they want to do. And I think once you try that, your answer is going to be, yeah, I need empty hand. I need self-defense. I need to be able to physically be able to defend myself before I could get to my firearm. And B, the biggest complaint we hear after an extremely close quarter shooting class is most people will exclaim, wow, I really need to get in shape.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will... That actually is going to segue rather nicely into the rest of the show when we start talking about fitness and other things
sure.
like that. We have to go to break in the next 20 seconds or so, and I don't want to try and ask a cheap question that you won't have time to answer. So
sure.
When we get back, we'll discuss the whole close-range gunfight thing a little bit more, then we'll talk about fitness. We're talking with Larry Lindemann from Point Driven Training and the ShivWorks Collective. And right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by 6 Hour Now with more options. We're not all the same, and our carry gun shouldn't have to be either. 6 Hour gives you choices, and with more models than the Bible's got Psalms, it's never been easier to find a 6 Hour that fits your needs. From the extremely versatile striker-fired P320 with modular grip frame to the Legion Series P226, the single-stack P225A1, or the entry-level SP2022, 6 Hour makes a model that's right for you. Just don't ask for Callahan full-bore auto lock. They don't make that yet. 6 Hour, when it counts. Oh, we're having too much fun during the breaks. There's a video of a vacuum cleaner exploding. And the squirrel, the squirrel is what...
You gotta let this go, man. They can't see it. We're on the radio.
I'm gonna post it on the Ballistic Radio Facebook page. It's my show! I do what I want! So anyway, joining us from last segment, and also for the rest of the show, Larry Lindemann. Larry, did you make it through the break?
I did.
I'm glad. I personally probably would have found something better to do, but I'm very thankful that you didn't. So, so going back to what we were talking about, you during the last break, you were discussing how with the advent of UFC and then simmunitions, how people were able to actually find out the answers to questions like, hey, what happens if I'm in an unscripted force-on-force setting? And, you know, you were saying one of the things people come away with the most is, man, I'm not in good enough shape. Let me ask you this. You've gotten to watch a bunch of ECQCs and done stuff like that. I've gotten to participate in one and watch parts of two others. It seems like that left to their own devices, you know, whether or not, I mean, even in the artificial environment of ECQC where you know letting someone get close to you is probably going to lead to something bad, people end up closer to us than we want, and introducing a gun into that situation doesn't always fix things.
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, if you even can introduce a gun into that
right situation.
Because, again, you know, there's an initiative def. You know, Craig, of course, has great terminology. And, you know, one of his phrases is an initiative deficit. And we can't treat every person we meet on the street as if they're going to attack us. As a matter of fact, psychologically, we don't know. We could start to figure it out. But the fact is that we failed. If we let somebody get within our, you know, within range of us, we've failed in a number of ways to preserve our distance. So we've gotten to a situation where somebody is close to us, and that in-flight weapons access, or IFWA, is very, very hard to do unless we get into some sort of a grappling situation where we can control that person's limb that's closest to where our firearm is on our body.
Right.
So if we don't exhibit that control, what's going to happen is that person is either going to foul our draw, or that person is going to grab that firearm as it comes out, and now we're going to be grappling for a firearm. And this happens time and time and time again. I don't want to give up any secrets, but here's what I'll tell you. If you fight inside of a car and you go for the weapon first, you will lose. And
yep.
I'm not saying that to be extra arrogant about it, but I've seen it over and over and over again. And that's part of one of our lessons is to let people try to go for that gun and see what happens. And in general, I would say closing in on almost 100% of the time, the person who focuses on the tool, who focuses on trying to get the gun or the knife, loses because they give up positional dominance. And the person with positional dominance now can rain down the hate, secure that person's limbs, and then start shooting or stabbing.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, too. It seems like that if somebody were to tool fixate, you know, to where like, oh, what I need to do is get the gun out and that'll solve the problem, is they're not actually problem solving the fight anymore and paying attention to what's like actually happening in front of them?
Yeah, totally, John. Yeah, I mean, we see this all the time. We see this on police videos a lot.
Right.
Because, you know, police are, of course, taught to draw and fire, draw and fire, draw and fire. And now in close quarter situations, they start to draw and they start to fixate on that draw. So the draw is not working, but they're still trying to draw. So instead of defending themselves, using their limbs to defend themselves, now they're getting a beat down and one of their hands is at their waist trying to get that weapon out while that weapon, it's not working because somebody's holding onto that weapon. And we see this over and over again where people fixate on the tool. For whatever reason, they can't extract the tool from its storage place. But their brain is telling them, get it out, get it out, get it out. But in reality, what's happening is they're getting their butts handed to them. And a lot of these, you know, in a lot of these films, it's a sad ending because they end up dying because they did try to defend themselves.
Well, and it seems like, too, that, you know, and once again, correct me if I'm wrong, but in a lot of those situations where it's a close range threat like that, if the, you know, and we're talking about a very specific situation, then we'll move forward. But
sure.
If the officer had tried stuffing the other guy's gun or weapon or whatever, as opposed to trying to access their own, it would have worked out a lot better for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know what we're finding, too, is that actually striking is almost detrimental.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that slows you down from tying that person's limbs up is detrimental. Because if I hit somebody, there's no guarantee that I'm going to incapacitate them. If I hit them and they go down, but they have a firearm, I've just given that person range to be able to draw that firearm.
Yeah.
Even though that range is on the ground, they're far enough away from me where I can't follow their draw. So we're starting to find really is that the most successful people in these situations are people who have some sort of Greco-Roman grappling, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, judo, any type of close grappling art. Those people end up being dominant in these situations with a little bit of instruction on what we're specifically looking for.
Well, yeah, and that brings up a good point. So I've done things. I was a bouncer at a bar for a couple years. I've never been a very good striker, but I've hit people pretty hard and had, you know, some success, some not. Jack, who is a frost giant of a man. And I already know what the answer is going to be. But, Jack, you've hit people before. Have you ever run into anyone that just didn't act the way you expected?
Like, I've hit people with everything I had in the face, and they just blinked, and then the fight was on.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no.
It's like, that's not right.
That's bad.
Yeah, yeah. If the 6'8", 400-pound dude hits you and you laugh at him, that probably is a bad day for somebody. But anyway, so this all comes back to a point that I sort of wanted to get to. How important, I mean, I know you already said that people say that they need to get in better shape, but how important is physical fitness for a fight that ends up, you know, becoming a grapple or going to the ground or something like that, where you're struggling to either retain a weapon or strip someone else of a weapon?
Yeah, John, I mean, it's a complicated question. I mean, it's a great question. It's a complicated question because part of it is your ability to be efficient under pressure. And so part of it is technique and experience. You've been there before. You're not going to freak out. You're not holding your breath. You're not holding your grip so tight that you're burning yourself out. So that's one, but that takes a lot of time and experience. And then, fitness is important. Really, when we hit an anaerobic threshold, when we go over our body's ability to produce energy with oxygen, we've hit what's called an anaerobic threshold. When we go over that threshold, we have about 20 seconds, and then we're basically useless. We basically shut down. So you think about Brock Lesnar's glorious losses. Usually they occur after a big flurry, and he thinks he's going to finish his opponent. He starts a big flurry. He's a big dude.
Yep.
And a lot of muscle mass. He burns through his ATP, basically chemicals that produce energy. He burns through that, goes over his anaerobic threshold, and the one-minute rest time between rounds is not enough for him to recover. He comes out, and he ends up losing. And this happens time and time again in ECQC, where people basically give up because they can't produce energy. They're
right.
over their anaerobic threshold. So, yeah. So conditioning is important, and experience and training is important.
Okay. Once again, we got about 30 seconds before the break. But as far as if you had to pick one thing, just real quick, what's the most important thing that someone could focus on right now if they wanted to get better? And then we'll talk about it more in a couple
minutes. Yeah, I'd probably focus an eight-week block on cardiovascular training, on long, steady distance or long, slow distance. They call it LSD training. Just a long, steady block of endurance training.
You got Jack's attention with the LSD training.
I'm interested. Tell me more.
Yeah. So we're going to go to break. We're talking with Larry Lindemann from Point Driven Training. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scattergun since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. I'm getting even more excited about the Wilson Combat projects that I can't really tell everyone about yet, but they're coming soon.
Well, I could tell them.
You could. I wouldn't, but you could.
The look on your face.
Anyway, we're talking with Larry Lindemann about close-range gunfights and fitness and stuff like that. Larry, are you still there?
I am still here.
Perfect. So before the break, I asked you what the number one thing people could focus on, right now, today, immediately to help them out. And you said that an 8-week block of cardio.
It's a hard question because, of course, there's not one thing. You know,
right.
I can't just say one thing. But I'll tell you what most people – okay, so two, a couple of things. One is you know, we train and I train for self-defense. I train because it's fun, but I still train for self-defense aspects.
Right.
But the chances of me being murdered are a hell of a lot lower than the chances of me dying from cardiovascular disease, respiratory disease, stroke.
I don't know, bro. You live pretty close to Chicago, though, so I mean...
It's true. This is true, but even still...
Right.
The chance of most of the people that I train being killed is pretty low. And if they are killed, it's probably going to be in an accident.
Right.
But the chance of these people dying from heart disease or stroke or some sort of cardiovascular disease or cancer, pretty high.
Yes.
Exercise also is something that fights against those main causes of death. You know, it's a protective factor against those main causes of death. So it makes sense that, you know, that we focus on that. But, yeah, I talked about a block of cardiovascular training because, frankly, most people just don't do it.
So as far as I know people are listening, like, oh, man, tonight's show sounds like a lot of work. I don't know. Talk about the LSD training as far as what. What is that, and why do you suggest that, and what's it do for us?
So, what it does is it increases the stroke volume of the heart, which means that that each beat of the heart, you actually will pump more blood, and blood carries oxygen.
Right.
It'll increase the efficiency of your cardiovascular system. So if my anaerobic threshold, that threshold where if I go over it, I have 20 seconds. If that threshold is 180 beats per minute of my heart rate, I will be more efficient at the lower levels. That level might go up a couple of beats or maybe more, and I'll be able to stay under that threshold even in the middle of a fight for my life. Additionally, it makes me much more efficient at processing oxygen in my body.
Right.
It also helps a little bit with fat loss. It decreases your chances for developing cardiovascular disease. So there's a lot of pluses to doing it, and it's really not that hard to do.
Yeah. And so as someone that has done the yo-yo with my general physical fitness and health many times throughout my life, the cardio that you're describing is really, really easy. You know, I do low impact stuff so that I'm not tearing my knee up or my hip up any worse than it already is. And generally I throw something on Netflix and I'm there for, you know, 60 to 90 minutes on the days that that's what I'm doing. So it's pretty simple.
Yeah, John, I mean, really what I'm looking at is Phil Maffetone, a doctor, I think he's a PhD. He, in the 80s, he came up with this, this MAF, maximal aerobic functioning. And basically what it is 180 minus your age, and that's your working heart rate.
Right.
So 180 minus your age. So at my age, my working heart rate is 127 beats per minute. So when I go out for a run, I'm running at 127 beats per minute. That is really not that strenuous.
Yeah.
And most of my training year is going to be in that range. And then when I'm training up for a competition is when I'm going to start doing anaerobic work, you know, these sprints and high-intensity interval training. But really, we max out our ability in those types of exercises in 3 weeks. So, you know, your dudes and dudettes who are doing CrossFit, they're doing high-intensity interval training 3 to 6 days a week forever.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why there's this high dropout rate and there's this high injury rate. So we could really take it easy, you know, get on a Stairmaster, go out and run, which is my preferred way to go. You could mix it up, do jump rope, hit a heavy bag, do burpees, get on a stationary cycle, mix it up, do whatever is good for you, as long as you're keeping your heart rate pretty much pegged at that number, that 180 minus the age number. You're getting the conditioning effect. So right. It's not about going out there and killing yourself every run. See, when we think about running, because, you know, most of us were competitive when we were teenagers, when we were in high school, we think about running around a track and really killing ourselves with a mile and a half run where we're pushing hard and our lungs are bleeding. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a nice, easy run at a very moderate heart rate to condition the aerobic system. So we're not going out there and learning how to suffer. We're going out there and actually training the aerobic system. If we go over that, our heart's beating too fast to really get the adaptive changes that we're looking for.
Well, and that's, you know, and I can only frame things in my own personal experience, so I apologize.
Sure.
I'm not trying to...
No problem.
Not trying to make it about me, but, like, you know, for instance, when I was younger, I was a distance runner for a while. You know, there was a time period where, like, I was running 5 minute and 20 second miles, you know, for a couple miles. If I slowed it down, I could do that indefinitely. So, mm-hmm. Like, when I go out now, if I, you know, jog or something like that, and I run an 11 or a 12 minute mile, I'm like, God, I'm terrible. I shouldn't be out here. And I start really beating myself up. And that's not really helpful.
Yeah, John, everybody does that, you know, and really some people, a lot of people are going to do that calculation. They're going to go buy a heart rate monitor. And I suggest like a Polar H7. It's a Bluetooth connected heart rate monitor. It goes on your chest. Yeah, it goes right to your smartphone.
Yeah.
And you go out there and you go at, you know, 130 beats per minute, 140 beats per minute, and you might have to walk, or you might go uphill and you might have to walk. That's the point.
Yeah.
The point is that hey, I'm not training my ability to run a marathon. I'm training my cardiovascular system to become more efficient. And it's going to take time to get that done. I like to see just like, Joel Jameson, does this MMA conditioning, really, really an expert. He likes to see MMA fighters with a resting heart rate around 52 beats per minute. So if we can lower that resting heart rate, it kind of shows us that we have made changes to the cardiovascular system and it gives us an indication of how conditioned we are.
And that's why do you think people have this idea that they need to go out and really just wail on themselves to get in better shape or like at least functional shape? Do you think people have a good idea of what functional shape is, or are they trying to meet unrealistic ideas?
Yeah, it's funny because I've seen so. What I didn't tell you in my history is that I have a degree in exercise physiology, and I was a graduate assistant in an exercise physiology lab in the university I went to. I also worked for 5 years at a hospital doing performance testing, so I've had a lot of experience with people training, and also had the science end of it as well. I think what happens is that we kind of harken back to that 5:29 mile that we were doing back when we were, 16 years old. And like you said, we tend to think that it's all about suffering. And you look back at these 1980s, endurance athlete icons, and these guys were pounding. I mean, they were, and they're still cardiovascular athletes that train way too hard and burn out way too early. And it's all about kind of measuring what we want to do is we want to make a commitment for the rest of our lives.
Right.
So we don't want to be in a situation where we flame out quick. One of the things is, I have some friends who get really into powerlifting, and they get to
Craig
a point.
Douglas.
But yeah, maybe he's one of them. But I remember a specific conversation with a friend, and he was saying, "Oh, this guy is super, super." I'm not talking about Craig.
Yeah.
But this guy is super, super strong. He's going to be great at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I said, I don't really think so. I mean, he's training for a one rep maximum, and he's not training for that particular type of activity. And so, of course, what happens is he goes in, he rolls, and he cramps up and he injures himself. And I saw that coming. I've trained power lifters in boxing, and they've completely. You still there, John?
Yeah.
I've seen I've trained power lifters in boxing, and I've seen them completely gas out, literally have to sit down after 40 seconds of work.
Hold that thought, actually, because we got to go to break. And when we get back, yeah. I'll ask you what you think fitness should be for people. We're talking with Larry Lindemann from Point Driven Training. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. Brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300-lumen sidekick to the 500-lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, "Aziz, light!" ever again. Doesn't matter if you are shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now, for a limited time as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, if you go to the Surefire.com web store and enter in the discount code ALL, the Lumens, ALLTHELUMENS, you can get 30% off everything at the Surefire.com web store except for suppressors and batteries. All the Lumens, no space, for 30% off. Anyway, we are talking with Larry Lindemann. Larry, you still there?
Hey, John, still here.
Perfect. We've made it to the last segment, so hopefully if there's no technical issues, we'll have done the entire show. And why would I say that?
Yeah, Jack? Why would you court fate like that?
Because I like to live dangerously.
Danger zone.
Yeah, right. So we were talking about fitness and cardiovascular health and things like that in the last segment. Here's my question for you. What is your idea of, what is fit? I mean, what is functionally fit for our purposes? I mean, if you're training for a specific thing, I get that. But for what should we be shooting for?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I don't want to seem like I'm anti-powerlifting because I do believe in the method of powerlifting for training. So that was not the point. The point is that we need to balance a bunch of things. So there is a spectrum. And let's put on one end of the spectrum, let's put a highly aerobically fit marathon runner. And on the other end of the spectrum, let's put an Olympic gold medal winning Olympic lifter.
Dmitry Klokov, he's my favorite.
Now we have, there you go, now we have that complete spectrum.
Jack just looked at me like, why do you know an Olympic power lifter?
That seemed like such an odd thing to have on standby.
He's an impressive dude. Yeah. Watch some of his videos.
You just have to have that. Fun facts. You never know when that's going to come in handy. So you know, we've got the skinny Ethiopian or Nigerian runner, and we've got the super heavyweight Olympic lifter. And I think for what we do, we have to shoot for the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is more like, say, what an Olympic wrestler would look like, or what a college wrestler would look like, or an MMA fighter. So with even certain modification or tweaks to that. So, I mean, really the general physical skills are cardiovascular endurance, stamina, strength, flexibility, power, speed, coordination, agility, balance, accuracy. All of these things are part of what makes a person fit. So it's very, very hard to define fitness unless you define it in context with why you need it. So the lineman in a football team has a completely different fitness needs than the running back does.
Right.
So it's really, you know, so when people say, what's the general thing we need? Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends on what you want to do. And so the discussion revolves around how strong do I need to be able to protect myself? How cardiovascular fit do I need to be in order to protect myself? Not to be elite, but in order to survive that potential conflict.
Right.
And, you know, there's some people who would say, well, I don't have to worry about it at all. And there's other people that say, I need to increase my level of cardiorespiratory fitness. I need to increase my level of strength. And so we need to do that in a measured way. We can't push it to one side of the scale completely while ignoring the other side of the scale. So that's really what I'm advocating for, is more of a balance between these attributes rather than pushing it all to one side and hoping that's going to be the ticket to our survival.
Well, and it seems like, too, that, you know, and I run into this, there are very few, but there are a couple questions that I feel comfortable, like, giving a semi-relevant answer to when I get asked them. But, like, most of the time whenever anybody asks me, like, a self-defense question, I'm like, it depends. Because, you know, you don't know what you're going to run into. You know, you might run into, you know, the crackhead with the raven out front of the convenience store, and then it doesn't really matter too much because you just got to suck a little bit less than he does. Or you might run into the four organized, well-trained terrorists or whatever. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. Yeah.
So, but I guess what, I mean, if you were to give somebody like a general metric, like, hey, here's something you might want to think about getting yourself to the place where you can do it, what do you think that would be? What would that look like?
What it would look like would probably be just basic standards in the basic lifts. You know, one times body weight bench press, a 1.5 times body weight squat, and a 2-time body weight deadlift. Those are basic measurements that are basically the minimum amount of strength that somebody who's close to athletics should be able to achieve, and everybody that's listening would be able to achieve, barring any type of, you know, physical disabilities.
Right.
On the cardiovascular side, trying to get that heart rate down to 52 beats per minute. Trying to lose some fat. You know, we didn't talk about fat loss, but trying to lose some fat so that we could be more efficient cardiovascularly, because, you know, the amount of weight that we're carrying around definitely affects our ability to move through space.
Yes.
And utilize oxygen. So, you know, the maximal oxygen consumption is measured in milliliters per kilogram of body weight per minute. So if I lower that kilogram of body weight, I'm increasing my my maximal aerobic consumption, my ability to maximally utilize oxygen, I'm increasing that just by losing fat alone. So that's another piece of this puzzle. And so I think getting to a manageable body weight, we pretty much all know if we're overweight or not.
Continue.
No, and doing, you know, and having a heart rate probably in the mid-50s, if we could do it, barring any type of physiological issues, and being able to do continuous cardiovascular exercise at that maximal aerobic function for 60 minutes or 90 minutes in a session, you know, the ability to do that without having breaks would give me a good indication. But ultimately, for me as a jiu-jitsu athlete, you know, I ask my training partners, hey, do you think I'm strong? Do you think I'm weak? Do you think, you know, how do I feel when I compete? Am I going over my anaerobic threshold? Am I pushing myself? You know, do I have to recover for a minute and a half after I do a round? So I kind of look at my actual functional abilities. And then I know, I say, well, okay, I need a little more work on this, or maybe I need a little less work on this. Maybe I need to focus on something else and just maintain any of these other functions.
That makes sense. We're coming up towards the end of the show, Larry. It's a quick hour. I'm sorry, man.
Yeah,
I want to have you back on and talk more about this because I think it's something that not enough people spend time on. If folks want to find out more about, you know, you, what you do, or things like that, where can they get more information at?
Yeah, pointdriventraining.com is my website. I have a couple of articles on LSD training, very detailed, so you can find some stuff on there. I'm on Facebook at Point Driven Training. I'm sure I'm on Twitter. I know I'm on Instagram at Point Driven Training. So I'm not exactly the most prolific writer, but I'm also at the range of 355 in Bolingbrook, Illinois, as the training coordinator there. So,
perfect.
So those are really the ways they could get a hold of me.
Perfect. Larry, I appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, John. Hey, anytime.
All right. Hey, be safe, brother. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks.
Yep.
Talk to you later.
Bye. So, next week, I don't know, but Melody Lauer is coming in town, so we're probably going to record a bunch of shows with her, and I know everyone will be happy because those shows are fun, apparently. I keep getting comments like, that should be the three of you more often. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio, and hey, keep leaving those 5-star reviews on iTunes. It really helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week!